The question is, what are some differences between place-based communities and aspirational communities? And that even comes up because a few months ago, I was asked to be at some company's board meeting, and there were other people who were asked to be there too. I was asked to talk about the natural world, and one of the other people who was there was a person who was talking about community, and he had a line in his presentation where he said that in the past, communities were place-based, and today, more and more, communities are what he called aspirational-based, where they're not based on where you are and what you are and who you are, but instead who you want to be. And when he said that, I stopped and I asked him, so I said, this really horrifies me. And he said, oh yeah, it horrifies me too. I'm just telling you what's happening. I'm not saying that I like it. And I've thought about this quite a lot since then. And I think in many ways, it's one of the major problems with this culture. And it's one of the problems that is getting worse day by day with this culture. And let's back up a little bit. And traditionally, communities were place-based. And this is certainly true of Indigenous people, whose religion, whose everything would be based on living in place. And that's even true, that's less true among non-Indigenous people, but it's more true 30 years ago than it is now, where growing up 40 and 45 years ago, my friends were the kids in the neighborhood, and we would play games together, we would hang out, and it was primarily, as I said, place-based. From everything I've read about and heard about Indigenous peoples, and from everything Indigenous people have said to me, everything is based on the land, which is what reality is. Everything does come from the land. And this is so that religion, if the point of a religion is to help us relate to each other and to help us experience the divine and to help teach us how to live, then of course a land-based religion would teach you how to live in that place with each other in that place and teach you how to experience the divine in that place. And this is a problem that I've had with any of the monotheistic religions, is that they are sort of precursors of the modern virtual reality aspirational communities, in that they are based on this idea of a universal God as opposed to divinity being in the locality itself. And so it's, even if there weren't all the patriarchal problems of all the Abrahamic religions, I would still have a problem with them, because if, once again, the purpose of a religion is to teach you how to live and how to experience the divine and how to get along, obviously you're going to experience the divine differently in the Near East than you will in a Pacific, Northwest Pacific rainforest. And you'll experience the divine differently in the desert, and you will have to live differently in the desert than you do in the rainforest of the Pacific Northwest. And if in the rainforest of the Pacific Northwest, the Talawa, for example, and other people had and have welcoming songs for the salmon. They would sing to the salmon. But singing to the salmon is completely meaningless if you live in the deserts of Arizona. That's not what you would do, and it would not help you to live. And so a problem that I have with the dominant culture has always been that it's not place-based, and that it affects to transpose its values across space into radically different places, and that will never serve the land, and it will never serve sustainability, and it will never make a long-term relationship with the land, and also it will never make for a long-term community. And just as to put in a parenthetical comment about that, we've talked before about how Peggy Reeve Sande studied the main characteristics of high rape cultures. Many of them were those that were very obvious. Highly militarized is high rape, or those that highly value men but don't value women are high rape cultures, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the characteristics of a high rape culture is a culture with a history of ecological dislocation in the last several hundred years. So what I'm suggesting with this is that if you have a way of life that you believe is transposable over space, by harming the land, it's also going to be harming of intrahuman relationships and harming of women. So we've sort of set a base of what is a place-based relationship. A place-based relationship is one based on place that respects place, that that holds place important, and that, you know, we're describing all indigenous cultures through all time for that, and indigenous, traditional indigenous hunter-gatherer cultures especially. And then we can fast forward to the 60s and 70s. When I was growing up, we still had something of a place-based childhood friends, at least. We didn't have, obviously, a place-based religion or a place-based larger community in that, you know, my family moved. I was born in Nebraska, and then we moved to Maine, and then we moved back to Nebraska, and then we moved to Colorado. So we weren't in place for that. But from, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, my closest friends were the neighborhood kids. And that was at least place-based a little bit. So this guy is talking about this, and he's talking about, especially in the computer age, and how many people these days form communities based not on their place, but instead, you know, Facebook. And they're based on their virtual friendships, based on a virtual place, and they are not. And one of the extensions of this is that they end up not being merely. What is the community based on if it's not going to be based on place, and it becomes based on interest, and that moves quickly, especially with this postmodern world, into being based on aspiration. So it's not even based on who you are, but it's on who you present yourself as online. So it's who you pretend to be, who you aspire to be. So you can have computer games where there are communities of orcs or elves or warriors or demons or sorcerers, and they will be a community that's based on. One of the things that this person does, it's very interesting, is he explores what are the effects of this. And one of the examples he gave that's a positive effect of this is he said that if you have children who create an avatar on the computer that is healthy and they themselves are not healthy and they're not exercising, that they're, if they choose an avatar who is buff, they end up exercising more than those who choose an avatar that is not. So that's good, but of course it begs the question of why they're not in good shape in first place, which is because they're sitting in front of a computer all day. And leaving that aside, now let's jump to the implications of all this, that this entire culture is based on aspirational community, and it has been from the beginning. When you have a heaven that is out there, as opposed to seeing the divinity right here, it's always been aspirational in terms of something else, not being in your body, in your place, but instead aspiring to heaven, aspiring to something you're not. And this is so true today in this postmodern world where, I mean, postmodernism and this entire culture is based on the belief that what we feel about reality is more important than reality itself. And this person who was talking was saying that that's how it's manifesting in communities these days. And this is really problematical for a number of reasons. One of them is that if it's an aspirational community instead of a community based on reality, it's based on something that's not true. It's based on, and any community based on something that's not true is based on something that's not true. And I don't see how that can be good. We see this in so many ways. We see this in science, that, you know, scientists get so excited when they create, you know, some enzymes that are one of the first steps toward life. And they say, wow, humans are ready to, you know, scientists are really starting to create life. But rabbits create life, and bunnies create life, and dandelions create life, and the real world is creating life all around us. You know, in my book, The Myth of Human Supremacy, one of the points that I really emphasized was, why is it that when humans create something, male humans especially, male humans of this culture create something, it's considered a big deal. But when nature creates it, it is dismissed. And that's, this is all tying in to the same point of what I think is more important than what's real. And we see this in everything from the whole transgender debate to so-called mainstream environmentalism, or mainstream so-called environmentalism, where as long as they call something green, it then they pretend it's actually sustainable. And we see this everywhere in this culture, where what we pretend is true, where we pretend that what we pretend is true, how do I say this? That we pretend that our pretensions are true, as opposed to what is true being true. And I want to come back to place-based community for a moment and say something that Jeanette Armstrong said to me a long time ago, which is, she said, you know, we Indians, she's an Okanagan writer and activist, Okanagan Indian, and she said, you know, we Indians have as many squabbles as white people do, but the big difference is that we know we're going to be living in place, and so we've had to develop means. It's like, I know that my great-grandchild might marry your great-grandchild, so we have to develop means to get along. And if you don't live in a place-based community, you don't have to develop those means to get along so much. And this is true of our relationship to the land too, that if you're planning on living in place for the next 500 years, you will find ways to get along with the bears, and you'll find ways to get along with the trees. You'll find ways to get along with everyone. You won't plow. You won't clear cut. You won't poison the water. You won't do any of that. So the question for me of the difference between place-based communities and aspirational communities is the difference between reality and pretend. And one of the big problems is that for thousands of years now, as was the title of one of my books, we've been living in a culture of make-believe. And unfortunately, when you live in a culture of make-believe, you are dysfunctional, and you are going to harm yourself and others and the land as we see. What solution do I see to this? The first solution I see is to the same solution that I always have, which is, I think the first and most important thing that we have to do is try to understand the truth as best we can. And to understand that no matter how much I may enjoy being a 27th level elvish cleric, that I'm not actually a 27th level elvish cleric, and I'm not really running around killing dragons. That's just pixels on a computer screen. And as always, I want for us to try to get back to reality. I was having an exchange with a friend of mine just before I came on here, and Idaho, she thinks, is the only state in the country that doesn't allow people to change their sex on their birth certificate. And it's fucking nuts. I don't understand. I don't understand how anybody can change their sex on their birth certificate. I don't understand any of this. I don't understand how the New York Times can say that that somebody had a sex change operation or somebody changed from male to female. It's like, it doesn't work that way. I can't have an operation and change from human to cat. I can't have an operation to change from mammal to reptile or anything else. These are states of being. And, you know, I thought for a long time about, you know, when I say there have to be verifiable measures, that's the thing, is I always say, you know, define woman, and your definition must be non-tautological. You can't use woman to define woman. And also it has to be verifiable, or falsifiable. And I thought for a long time, before I ever started using that in public, I thought for a long time about the difference between, say, homosexuality and the trans, and concerning oneself and identification. And what I finally, because somebody, how would you have a verifiable metric that someone's homosexual? You could say, well, it's because a man has sex with a man. And the difference is that homosexuality is a preference as opposed to an identification. So you can't demand verifiable metrics for someone's preferences. I can say I love potatoes, and that's great, but because I'm pre-diabetic, I can't eat them very much, which means I do love potatoes, but my metric for loving potatoes at one point would have been, will you eat 6 baked potatoes at a time? And now I can eat 1 baked potato a week, but I still love potatoes. I can really enjoy basketball, but my ankles don't let me play anymore. That doesn't mean I don't enjoy basketball. But am I a basketball player as an identification? No, I am not a basketball player because objectively, I do not play basketball. And so so I worked through that for a long time, trying to figure out, okay, when do you demand verifiable metrics? And when you have a state of identification, I am a vegetarian. Well, last night I had roast for dinner, so no, you are not actually a vegetarian. This is a identifiable metric. I was a high jumper. We have a verifiable metric. I high jump. It's like Stephen King says, when somebody says, how do you know if you're a writer? He says, well, it's very simple. If you have written something and then someone gave you a check for it, you deposited that check in the bank and then used that money to pay your electric bill, you're a writer. And I love that. It's a verifiable metric. We can disagree with this metric. We can say there are different metrics that are appropriate. That's all fine, but there's a metric. And that's the thing that kills me. They are changing sex on birth certificates which you don't get to do. Actually, it's no different than the whole sustainability question, where we have all these people who are saying, you know, solar is great. It's like, what's your metric? What is your metric for whether solar is great or not? Metric is, well, it makes electricity. Well, yeah, but did it actually help the earth? What is your metric for whether this solar generation facility actually helps the earth? What is your metric for whether green logging is really green? What are your metrics? Like, there's one logger I know of who is probably maybe one of 5 loggers in the world whom, if trees had hands, would not be killed by them. He's actually okay. He has a metric. His metric is, and he works on like a 240-acre plot. He says every year there has to be more, the actual volume of trees on this land must be bigger than the year before. There are other metrics we could argue about. It's like, well, what about dead standing trees? No, for homes for those who live in dead standing trees. We could argue those. But the point is, he's got a metric. And most green logging is, oh, our metric is we got certified by the Green Sustainable Board. It's the same as this. they don't understand that. It's like, I get so offended when they say assigned female at birth. It's like, no, you weren't assigned female at birth or assigned male at birth. You're recognized as male or female. Nobody assigned you. Nobody said, oh, we're going to assign this person as a mammal. For God's sake, it's a physical state of being. And this ties to everything we're talking about. That's the aspirational community bullshit. Is, oh, we don't know yet to what sex G aspires. Like, it doesn't actually matter to what sex you aspire. It's what sex you are. This is all tied in. It is no surprise this is happening at the same time that genetic modification has been, because that is the queering of different species. The mixing of all those boundaries. And that's what this culture does too, in terms of mixing different biomes, that it just makes them all this big mush, as opposed to the biome here. It's like, okay, I was asked to do a talk in Western Illinois a few years ago by a guy who is desperately dedicated to restoring Native Prairie and to protecting Native Prairie. And he was talking about, he does not like to use seeds of a species who were seeds of plants who lived more than, say, 50 miles from where he is now doing, even if it's the same species, because within the species, there are very, very specific requirements that will be different from, he thinks, from swale to swale. And so he doesn't want to mix beyond that artificially. And I don't agree with him 100%, but I so very much respect that. I respect incredibly his respect for the integrity of the local place. And I contrast that with what this culture does, which is to, well, let's throw any tree species in anywhere, and let's just put in anything anywhere, and to make everything a giant mush, which is exactly what queer theory is doing theoretically. And this all ties back to the aspirational stuff too, because they move to Crescent City, to Del Norte County, which is a redwood rainforest, and then they put in a lawn, which is, they are changing the place, changing what is real to fit their fantasies. And this is what's happening in every part of this culture. I mean, that's just another, you know, aspiration is really, when we think about it, aspiration is just a fancy word for fantasy. And that's what we're doing everywhere, is changing everything in this planet into our own aspirations, our own fantasies, our own daydreams. And that can only end in failure. That can only end in disaster for everyone involved. And it's all based also, this is another thing that kills me, is when people say, oh, they were born in the wrong body. And it's the same, that's what's killing the planet too, is this idea that we're born on the wrong planet, that this isn't where, you know, heaven's where it's at, instead of this is heaven right now. This whole notion of being born in the wrong body is just extraordinary to me, because this is our only home. This is the only home that we will ever have. It seems awfully ungrateful to say that your body is wrong because you've got some issues. And I mean, like I said, I've said many times, you know, I was a really good high jumper, but I was very good, but I was about 4 inches too short to be world class. And well, does that mean I was born in the wrong body? I mean, I was a world-class jumper in here. And likewise, I really loved basketball in high school. I'm 6 feet tall. And to have been a really good basketball player, given the skills I had, I mean, the skills I had, I would have had to be 7 feet tall to be really, really good. Because I was good, but I wasn't great. And had I been 7 feet tall with the same skills, I would have been something. So, you know, was I born in the wrong body again? And I had a lot of fast twitch muscles. I knew long distance runners who had a lot of slow twitch muscles. Were they born in the wrong bodies because they couldn't high jump? It's like, what, just because I can't do something? What about somebody so my vision's getting worse because I'm getting older. Am I in the wrong body now? It's all nuts. I mean, for God's sake, I have Crohn's disease, which is an incurable progressive illness. And it has almost killed me multiple times. But that doesn't mean I'm in the wrong body. It just means I have Crohn's disease. It's like, grow the fuck up. This is the body you were given. And this is the body you should cherish. And I say this again as someone who has an autoimmune disorder that's really bad. So it's not like I have the perfect body, but I do actually have the perfect body, just like you do, just like everybody else does, because it's the body you got. Another thing that pisses me off about all this is what they should have been told by their parents when they were 6 and 7 and 8 years old. It's like, I know there are things that you don't like about the world, but sometimes we just have to put up with things. And I know that you wish that you could run faster, but you can't. But you know, you're really good at other things. Why did their parents not? And this is the whole culture too. This whole culture, the idea that you can have it all, that is the big lie of this culture. That you can have it all, that you can have this industrial system and a planet, and that you can have mining and a planet, and that every little thing that you want, you will get. And every big thing that you want, you will get. But I got news for you, which is you're not going to get it. And ultimately, here's the big one. You're going to die. And that's the price of admission. And that's the price of admission for living. And that's the price of admission for living and being a creature who sexually reproduces, is that creatures who sexually reproduce, that's how we mix up the gene pool, is by sexually reproducing and then dying. And I'm sorry you don't like it. And I'm sorry that not everything goes your way, but not everything goes your way. And that's a discussion their parents should have had with them over and over. And this entire culture and all these aspirational communities and this whole culture is basically an overgrown, spoiled little brat